Big Blue Insider is on News Radio 630 WLAP and WLAP.com. Get on the show. Call 280-CATS. That's 280-2287. Or toll free at 1-800-606-GAME. That's 1-800-606-4263. Big Blue Insider is brought to you by UK Healthcare. Now, here's Dick Gabriel.
Hey! Almost made it to the holiday. Hey, the microphone works. Yay! Good job, Curtis. Curtis came in with a sledgehammer last night, fixed everything.
Mm-hmm.
If you missed the opening of the show last night, well, things didn't go too terribly well on my return from a little bit of time off, but everything's working right now, so we are here just ahead of the holiday. We're glad you're with us, and it's going to roast. It's going to be just a moasty toasty for the next, really all week. So just stay in your car with the AC cranked or in the house with the AC cranked, and we'll get you through the week. Welcome to the Big Blue Insider. Coming up tonight, we're going to talk a little more NBA and a lot of UK, which is what we've been talking about a lot. But, man, a lot of breaking news. And now the fallout about DeMarcus Cousins becoming a Warrior. And there are the requisite wailing and gnashing of teeth about the fact that they're assembling this great team. And the Bay Area, as well as in Los Angeles, and blah, blah, blah. So what? You know, if you've got a problem with that, get better. If you're a team and you have a problem with that, draft smarter, sign smarter, get better. Has it hurt the NBA? Well, no, the ratings say it hasn't. And let's face it, the networks are going to show a lot of Laker games. Yeah. In addition to a lot of Warrior games, but let me ask you this, Mr. I watch two NBA games a night sometimes. What are they going to do with that West Coast time slot now? They're going to have to hope that while the Warriors are on the West Coast, the Lakers are making a swing through the East, and I don't know if it works that way, but what do you want to bet the NBA makes it work that way?
Yeah, they'll be showing a lot of L.A., I almost just called him LeBron.
Why not?
I mean, but they'll be showing a lot of Lakers away games on the East Coast, a lot of Warriors away games on the East Coast, and then they'll jump back to the West Coast home games for the second time slot, I guess, most nights. Because I saw a meme, and it was, in theory, the five best players in the Eastern Conference right now versus the starting lineups of the Warriors.
Yeah.
I mean, it's a close call.
It is tough. Now, there's only one basketball.
Yeah, all those things are very, very true.
And you know, the other thing, too, that I noticed last year is, and I heard one journalist say, you know, the Warriors really don't care if they win or lose. They know how good they are. That is totally wrong, you know, because obviously you want to win as much as you can to get home court advantage and all that stuff. The thing is, the Warriors don't freak out if they get behind or if they lose some games, because they know they're capable of being the best team. Now the speculation is, and Curtis and I were talking about this prior to the show, at least one basketball writer, and it's actually Rick Bucher, who is a well-respected NBA writer, is positing that DeMarcus Cousins may come off the bench for the Warriors, and they would keep with that death lineup, their first five, keep Draymond Green in the middle and then bring DeMarcus off the bench with another group. I don't know that DeMarcus Cousins signs a contract following a conversation where somebody said to him, now, you know, we may bring you off the bench. And well, if that's the case, if they didn't and he feels double-crossed, how's that chemistry going to work out?
Probably not particularly well.
No.
I think, listen, this happens all off seasons every year. It happened last year when they talked about Carmelo potentially coming off the bench. He didn't come off the bench.
He announced that wasn't
I know. Rajon Rondo now this year came out and said, hey, it's apparently an open competition.
Best man wins, yeah.
Rajon Rondo is going to start next season. When DeMarcus Cousins is healthy, he's going to start for the Warriors.
How can he not? He's an all-star caliber center.
Yeah, he's going to start for the Warriors. I mean, that's fine to kind of speculate that. And what's going to be interesting, and it's a little cliched, but it's kind of true. Like, who finishes?
Yeah.
Because as you mentioned, this is they have six guys that have been All-Stars or, yeah, they've all been All-Stars. I think Iguodala has been an All-Star because you mentioned that quote-unquote death lineup, which I think they've actually renamed the Hampton Five.
Yeah.
Or at least Draymond
tried to. I think the death lineup was 2-3 years ago.
Yeah. And so, yeah, because it involved Harrison Barnes. And the Hampton Five, they kind of like did some rebranding that no one completely bought into because that's not really a great name. And anyway, so Iguodala, you know, has a finals MVP. You got Curry, Thompson, Iguodala, Draymond Green, and Kevin Durant, and then DeMarcus Cousins. One of those guys isn't going to be on the floor at the end of the game.
Right.
That's going to be, and it's, you know, it'd be easy to say Iguodala is going to be the odd man out, but being the defensive specialist that he is, can you take that off the floor? In certain situations, it's there. I think there could be hurt feelings, but I don't think it'll be from the starting lineup because I think that's something that egos that I think Iguodala's kind of mentality is I'm fine coming off the bench, I would imagine. So I don't think that'll be a hang up now.
I thought it was a fascinating move simply because it looked like playing alongside Anthony Davis and, of course, briefly with Rajon Rondo, it looked like Cousins and Davis could be part of a team down there in New Orleans that went against the flow, went against, I guess you could say it's still it's positionless, although that freed up Davis to play facing the basket and all that stuff and be more of a forward. But it looked like they were putting themselves, they make the playoffs last year with DeMarcus hurt and Anthony Davis playing like a madman. But it looked like they were moving into that rarefied air in the Western Conference, especially with San Antonio backing up. So it looked like the two former UK big men were going to carry that franchise with help from two other ex-Wildcats. And then it all just, in the stroke of a pen or two strokes of two pens, it all changed. Now, New Orleans picks up a Wildcat in Julius Randle.
Yeah.
And I saw speculation on social media with Cousins leaving and Randle going, well, I think New Orleans got the better of the deal. I don't think so.
Well, I mean,
it may work out better, and we'll see, but I don't know that you say that right now.
No, not if they're both at their best.
Right.
Now, there are some, you know, injury concerns and personality concerns coming back from injury, and then if you don't give Cousins the max, if you're any other team, probably, but the Warriors and the Celtics is the other team that was apparently rumored who Cousins was kind of talking to do the exact same thing.
Right.
Yeah, but that's what I'm saying. So those two quote-unquote champion contenders from each conference,
each
the
coach,
favorites.
Yeah.
If you weren't offering Cousins the max and you weren't one of those two teams, he would probably see it as a slight, even though he's aware of the question marks.
Oh, sure.
So you kind of start off on the wrong foot. And now there's some tweets coming out from an anchor down in New Orleans who's talking about how the Pelicans are upset because they actually, you know, the whole thing was Cousins said he didn't have offers.
Yeah.
And the Pelicans said they maybe hadn't had a formal offer, but they were working through a sign and trade process where he would have probably made 2 or 3 times as much salary next season.
Yep.
But that's still, I mean, that's slight, and it's kind of like, why would I help you if you don't want me?
For more money. That's the only reason.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, you're going to give me a little bit more money,
but
I still think I'm worth more, so I'm just going to take a, and I mean.
And he's only been there for a few months, so it's not like, you know, I owe you, you owe me.
Well, and on top of all this, and we haven't even discussed this at this point, but the Pelicans, just looking at this from high up, terrible deal. They traded for DeMarcus Cousins. Lost a couple of assets. Now, those assets, Buddy Hield was one of the main ones. They weren't superstars or anything, and a lot of people thought that the Pelicans didn't get enough back for, the Sacramento didn't get enough back for an all-star level talent and everything. But now looking at it, well, they probably wouldn't have kept him either, and the Pelicans traded that away for 65 games. Now, granted, that was injury and other kind of deals, but
they gambled.
Yeah, and they lost.
Yeah. Well, and it happens. You know, but I think they made a nice move in signing Julius Randle. And I don't say that just because he played here. But, again, we talked about this a little bit last night. When you project his numbers over 48 minutes, and he's not going to play 48, but you know, that's kind of an even Steven way to do it. He's good for 29 points a game. He was just rounding into what he is going to be in the NBA with the Lakers. And you don't know if that's going to happen in New Orleans. You know, different system, different situation, different coach. But playing alongside Anthony Davis, and I'll tell you, Cousins signed with the Warriors, but one thing we learned about Randle is he is a Warrior, the way he plays. And he's got to stay healthy well. I mean, you know, what was it, his first game he got hurt with the Lakers.
Was it even a game or was it a preseason game?
Might have even been a preseason game. Now, you know, it wasn't like he's had a rash of injuries and all that stuff. I mean, he broke his leg. Mm-hmm. But anyhow, it's a fascinating landscape. I really feel bad in all of this. Who do you think we feel bad for? Luke Walton. Can you imagine? Luke Walton's the head coach of the Lakers for now. Although, remember Magic Johnson was the head coach of the Lakers for a little while?
Yeah.
So now you've got a guy who's running the organization who knows what it feels like to be on the bench as a former player and as one of the greatest players ever. Luke Walton was not one of the greatest players ever. He was a nice player. But Magic Johnson...
Well, he was the best basketball player of all Bill Walton's sons.
Probably, yeah.
That's a fact.
But now you've got a guy in the front office who can relate to you as a coach who is trying to make something out of all these parts he's been given, including one of the greatest players who ever walked the planet, active players, who many believe is the coach per se. I mean, you know, that they're going to do what LeBron says before they do what Luke Walton says. So this is really going to be a fascinating litmus test, I think.
Yes.
For Magic Johnson as the general manager in every sense of the word. And here's the other thing, too. LeVar Ball, everybody thought, well, he's going to be Luke Walton's biggest problem. He is yesterday's laundry in this scenario until Rajon Rondo beats out his kid, if indeed that happens, and I believe it will.
Yeah. Or Lance Stevenson does something crazy, or JaVale McGee does something crazy.
Yeah.
I mean, they got lots of things to kind of try to keep in check.
Yep. So, oh, by the way, you may be able to find it. I think I heard LeVar speak to TMZ. I think they jumped him at the airport.
Sounds about right.
Yeah.
On both of their accounts.
And he was, you know, something about his son playing alongside the best player, you know. So we might be able to find that for you.
Did you got that flipped?
I know.
I mean, LeBron playing with the best player, his son.
I know what you're saying. But we'll see if we can find that. Coming up, Terrell Owens has let everybody know where he is going to be when everybody who matters is at the Hall of Fame, where he should be. He's already said he is not going to show up. He will make his speech elsewhere. We'll tell you all about that and more. Coming up at the bottom of the hour, Jen Smith of the Herald Leader. We're going to talk about Kentucky football with her. Hour number two, Brett Dawson will join us. Brett covers the Oklahoma City Thunder, former UK beat writer. And now with Hamidou Diallo out there and Nerlens Noel out there, and as Curtis told you last night, Nerlens said, no thank you to 4 years and a truckload of money, had to settle for 2 years and a wallet full of a little bit of change. We'll talk about that tonight on the Big Blue Insider here on 630 WLAP. Welcome back to the Big Blue Insider. Dick Gabriel, Curtis Birch. Drake the intern is with us. Drake's a football guy. Drake Jackson, football Wildcat. Terrell Owens is going to give a speech on Hall of Fame Saturday. That is on August the 4th. And I went up to the Hall of Fame, Steve Moss and I did, to cover Dermonti Dawson going in for WKYT. And it was really, really great. The speeches weren't too long. It wasn't too hot and humid. You know, we kind of braced ourselves for all that stuff. But it was really an enjoyable evening. And it was really fascinating to hear each person and what the Hall of Fame induction meant to them. And, of course, you know, people are introduced by other folks. And Steve Parker, who coached Dermonti at Bryan Station High School, was the guy who accompanied Dramani on stage and helped him pull the shroud off the bust there. And, you know, we got to see it later on, and it looks a lot like him. It didn't look like – who was it? Was it Messi? Who was the soccer player who had the – who knows Ronaldo? Had the horrible bust.
The bust, yeah, that was Ronaldo.
In the airport. They've since replaced it, but that thing was just a cartoon. But anyhow, Dramani's looked just like him. But Owen says he is going to make his speech far away – from the Hall of Fame. I've already criticized him for that, as most people have. What do you think, Drake, the intern? You're a guy who would love to be in a Pro Football Hall of Fame someday.
Yeah, that's the ultimate goal, obviously. But
Write that down, Curtis.
Yeah, I do like the decision for Terrell Owens to go to UT Chattanooga and hold some type of ceremony. I don't think that should be the ceremony, because the Pro Football Hall of Fame is – one of the biggest traditions in sports. It's very popular. Obviously, it's a big deal once you get in there, and I think you got to show some respect to that. I was a big fan of Terrell Owens growing up. I mean, even when he retired, I was only like 14 years old. So when I was a little kid, I always watched him and stuff. And I do wish he would.
Were you Terrell Owens in the backyard?
I was on Madden. Oh yeah.
What am I saying in the backyard? Madden. Sorry.
No, I wasn't shaped anything like Terrell Owens, so I was an offensive lineman when I was playing in the backyard.
Oh man.
But I do think it's cool for UT Chattanooga. I mean, I don't.
It is.
How many NFL Hall of Famers do they have?
Now they have one.
They have one now, exactly. And I think that's cool. To hold a ceremony there, it's a big deal for that school. It's a big deal for him, and I'm sure he shows a lot of pride there, coming from a school like that. But obviously, it's his decision. He can do whatever he wants. But I do think, just out of respect, just do it just like everybody else has. And
maybe that's the answer. That. Maybe he doesn't want to be. I've not yet seen an explanation. And, you know, he doesn't really owe us an explanation, but that would be, I think, the right thing to do. I mean, and he says he wants to celebrate. He put out a message. I think this is an Instagram post. He wants to...
Kids call it the Graham.
The Graham, you kids do? Okay.
Us millennials.
Yeah, that's right. He said he wants to, it'll be the best weekend of his life, and wants to celebrate at a place that means so much to him. And he wants to be in a place that provided him an opportunity beyond high school, and where I truly began to find myself as an athlete. And like you said, that's pretty cool, to share it with the people and the community at UT Chattanooga. And I'm not saying that just because one of my oldest friend's son goes to school there, but I've not yet seen him explain, which I think would be the respectful thing to do, since he's clearly not going to go. At first, I thought he was bluffing, but then I thought, well, all right, why are you doing this? And I still haven't. Have you, Curtis? Have you seen him say, here's why I'm not going?
No, not really, but I mean, he's Terrell Owens, so it's
right
at the core of it is probably just, you know, an attention grab to an certain
same
extent.
Reason he did the sit-ups in the
yeah
the
that's
driveway.
What I was gonna say, I think that will this be set up, will there be like a bench and he's just gonna be doing sit-ups while he gives the speech, you know, like he'll be doing some ab crunches while he's thanking people, like
right.
every sit-up he'll thank somebody. Because, I mean, apparently he's still in awesome shape. Didn't you see the viral
yes.
video of him dunking on the dude?
Yes.
At however old he is now, which was just insane, because he's not like a giant. I mean, he's tall, but you know, he's not Kristaps Porzingis, 7'3", or something, where you can just reach up and dunk it.
Didn't they clock him in the 40 as well?
Yeah. He's still in – because there was a joke about him making a comeback. At
yeah.
least I think it was a joke. Maybe not in his mind, but
well,
I don't
have
know.
To forfeit going into the Hall of Fame then.
That would be the
retirement.
Ultimate curve. Get inducted and then go back.
It would.
Because then what are you going to do? Can you take him out? How does that work? Has that ever
know.
Been tried?
I
think if anybody's going to try it, it's going to be him.
So, Drake, we've got your commitment here and now that you may do something here in Lexington if and when you're ever in the Hall of Fame, but you will be in Canton if you're ever inducted.
I will be there, but it would be cool to have some type of celebration here.
All right, we're going to hold you to both. All right?
I'll Let's do my best.
Curtis Thanks. And I are still around for that. Jen Smith coming up next, 630 WLAP. The first kick I took was when I hit the ground. Welcome back to the Big Blue Insider. There are only 60 days left until college football season, and we know that. Now, we're going to have our 50-day countdown coming up in 10 days on the Big Blue Insider, but Jen Smith has been counting down, and she posted that today. How are you, young lady?
I'm good. As I typed it, I was feeling a sense of dread and fear creeping into my life again.
Now, see, that seems like an odd thing to say, but, you know, you're already working hard between the job and the family, and now I know how hard you work during football season, but please tell me part of you is excited.
Always. It's fun just to sort of see all the stuff that you write about and that you've been speculating about on radio shows and that you've been thinking about sort of come to fruition. And so that part's always sort of fun and interesting to me. But, yeah, you know, the idea that I would have family dinners and stuff is always nice, too, and I don't get those during most of the football season. So.
Are you kind of sling the food at them as you're going out the door or what?
No, the best part is I usually make the meal, and then I leave to go cover practice, and when I get home, it's almost always gone or it's freezing cold. So that's how it works.
Well, you know, I respect you for raising the kiddos and raising your husband. So while you're juggling the beat, but you do such a great job. I assume you do a great job with the fam, and I know you do a great job with the beat. So let us talk some football. You and I have been around for a little while. We've covered the quarterback. I don't know if controversy is the right word, but the quarterback question, if you will. I don't know if it's ever been like this with, you know, nobody coming back with a really appreciable experience, but we know this, Jen, they will not answer our questions at the end of the day. They will not tell us who's going to be the starter until they're darn good and ready. So, but we still have to ask the questions, don't we?
Of course we do. But, you know, I think that fans might be a little bit down about the, it's interesting to me the sort of juxtaposition, because if you listen to the coaches on other radio shows that they've been on this year, this off season sort of around the country, and I'm guessing at SEC Media Days in less than 2 weeks, people are going to ask Mark Stoops about that. And his sort of pat answer is, we're going to have a really great quarterback, and we're going to have an upgrade in that position regardless of if it's Terry Wilson or if it's Gunnar Hoke or even Danny Clark, that we're going to have somebody who's really good that's going to lead the offense in an effective way. And I think a lot of people were sort of buying into that idea, but then I'm not sure that watching the spring game made people feel super confident about what the situation is. I don't know if the quarterbacks were nervous or it's so much of a competition, but it just didn't feel like they were able to put together any kind of flow offensively.
Yep.
And I think that that's kind of a concern if you're a UK fan going into the season.
I agree, and it's awfully hard to see that in a spring game. And so now we're reduced to, if that's the word, clinging to every word they say about the quarterbacks, they being Mark Stoops and Eddie Grant and Darren Hinshaw, you know, but they're very careful about that as well. But I will go back to this, Jen. When we asked Darren Hinshaw about the quarterback picture 2 years ago, remember how he would mention every quarterback and about preparing every quarterback, you know, and he would say Drew and Steven and, you know, and,
right.
and we saw what happened. So I kind of trust the process, if that's the right word. I think they've earned that, don't you?
Yeah, I mean, you're definitely 100% right about that. And the other caveat to what I said about maybe the spring game not showing them in the best light is, you know, they were really down as far as playmakers. I mean, their top two tight ends were out coming back from injuries. You know, their top wide receiver, you know, and Dorian Baker was out. Taven Richardson is probably the second best, you know, leading wide receiver coming back. He played, I think, 6 or 7 snaps. So, you know, in their quest to be as vanilla as possible in the spring game, they might have left, you know, Cat fans with a kind of vanilla taste, I guess, is sort of the way to look at it. So maybe we weren't able to see what those guys are even able to do, and I'm not sure that we will until September 1st.
Yeah.
So I think it's going to make this offseason, you know, especially interesting, at least offensively.
I'm sure whenever people get the opportunity, they want to talk football with you, you know, maybe in the grocery store aisle or church or whatever. But when they talk to me and they ask me about, you know, what's going to happen, the quarterback, blah, 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 I always bring up the tight end position. And people, it's not that they forget about it, but it's like they have failed to consider that. And their eyes brighten immediately because they think about C.J. Conrad. And I remind them there's good depth there. CJ told me during the broadcast of the Blue-White game, because he was hurt and he could talk to us on the air, he called it a tight end-oriented offense. I kind of chuckled, but Freddie Maggard, who I know you you respect and like a great deal, he chimed right in. He said, he's right. This is a tight end offense. Has he ever said anything to you like that, CJ, or anybody like that?
You know, it's interesting because Eddie Graham has brought it up a couple times that he sort of he sees a lot of potential with the tight ends going forward in this offense, that the guys like, you know, Justin Rick, who sat out most of the spring with, a spleen, a kidney injury, some laceration of a major organ, and then, you know, CJ was out, obviously, with the shoulder and foot pains. So they also have two really good guys coming in, highly rated tight ends that are sort of the prototypical body type of an
yep.
SEC tight end.
Yep.
They can all pass, you know, catch passes. We'll see if they can block. And Eddie Graham brought up, you know, that he's even seen, you know, he's seen serious potential where they could have two tight ends, or even, you know, drop CJ into a wide receiver position and have two tight ends on the, you know, the outside. So, I mean, there's potential, I guess, this season for at least, you know, two tight ends to be playing at any given time. And they had a lot of success with that sort of early on, you know, running ball behind those guys for Benny and then being able to catch some of those passes, you know, early in the season. So I think that Eddie likes what tight ends can do, and they have to figure out a way to make sure that they have a quarterback that can get the ball to those guys.
Okay, Jen, this is Curtis. And, you know, with the two tight ends thing, is that more of a factor? There's so many question marks at wide receiver. You know, you got injuries coming back for Dorian Baker. Lynn Bowden's still learning the position. Other guys still being young. You know, you can run through them all. Or do you think that the talent from Rig, or as Vince Mero calls him, Riggs, you know, is just so great that he would be, you know, better on the field even if the wide receiver was at full strength, wide receivers were at full strength?
I think it's a little bit of both, Curtis. I think that there's a scenario where, you know, they could use both of those guys as sort of blocking tight ends or pass-catching tight ends, and then they really like, I mean, I know Vince is usually really high on whoever he recruits and brings onto the team, and that's just sort of the way that Vince Merrill is. But, you know, a lot of the sort of outside analyst types are calling those other two guys, you know, strong in that way, too. So I think that they just feel better about the tight ends going forward, and they feel better about what they might be able to do versus all the unknowns that they're going to have at wide receiver.
Jen Smith joining us from the Herald Leader, Kentucky.com. She's the football beat writer for the Wildcats. And as she tweeted today, 60 days until the opener. You know, one of the names, and I'm doing some research for some stuff and going through last year, and one of the names that I think becomes more and more intriguing the more I read about him, I mean, we just saw him scratching the surface last year, was Lynn Bowden. And I'm really curious about how he fits in. Well, he'll fit in, but, you know, how they use him now with another year of practice and preparation and all that stuff.
Yeah, it's interesting because they spent most of last season trying to dial back the expectations about Bowden. He arrived on campus, you know, a week into training camp. He had never really played wide receiver position before. There were a lot of sort of unknowns about the guy, but they knew he was athletic. And just look at, you know, to look at kickoff returns at Vandy to see what he's able to do, his sort of elusiveness that everybody talked about when he was in high school. So, you know, I think he's really, like you said, a super interesting guy to think about because this is the first, he told me in the spring, this is the first offseason he's ever been in a weight training program. So the guy had no strength, you know, that was sort of built in. He's just kind of going off natural ability in high school. And then, you know, he thinks that that's given him more explosiveness and more, you know, more ability to do some things that they want to do. And then if you look around at, you know, kind of the versatility that he has, I think they showed a little bit of how they can use him in multiple ways. But I think you're going to see a lot more of that, you know, come September.
We have talked a lot of offense, but in going back and sifting through last year and looking at missed opportunities, and you wrote a nice piece a little while back about how the defense really struggled last year. How and where do you see improvement? Because you're right, they made a bit of a startling drop from, you know, it looked like the middle of the pack, ready to move forward, to dropping almost to the bottom of the SEC.
Yeah, it's really hard to get a grip on what happened to the secondary exactly. When you talk, I mean, I talked to the Stoops pretty extensively about this in June, I guess, when I sat down with him. And, you know, the secondary is his thing. That's the thing he's coached. It's the position he played. It's what he's done his entire, you know, 25-plus year career. So So you could tell just by his body language, he was really annoyed by all the problems in the secondary. But he was very quick to point out that everything the guys are doing in front of them directly affects what happens with the secondary. So, you know, you can look at the secondary and say, man, a lot of stuff has to change. They have to get better, you know, especially in coverage. But then you also look at the defensive line and they have to improve. For the defense to make the step, to take this leap that Stoops is talking about, they're going to have to get better play from the defensive line. And he has not been shy this offseason, and in the spring specifically, talking about this being the best defensive line that he's coached at Kentucky. That it has a lot of depth, it has a lot of playmakers, it has a lot of potential, and it's young potential. I mean, guys like, you know, Bohanna is the nose guard, and then they move Josh Pascal inside. He's going to end up with a starting spot, I'm fairly convinced, based on things people are saying to me. So, you know, the idea that these guys are sort of becoming the base of a defensive line that could be strong is going to help everybody on the defense. My big question mark actually going forward for the defense this year is linebacker. I mean,
yeah,
they can't afford even one significant injury, and they're going to have, you know, they're going to have a redshirt freshman or a true freshman playing in a starting spot. And that's a very big deal, especially in the SEC against some of these teams and the way they run the ball.
Jen, this isn't exactly a fair question because it's trying to read somebody, you know, but you know, you've been around Mark Stoops enough, been to a ton of his press conferences, interviewed him a ton. And a lot of this summer, we've talked about how Calipari is obviously amped up about his team because he won't shut up. When you interviewed Mark Stoops there, were you able to kind of take anything away, just broadly speaking, about next season, how he felt?
Yeah, it's not a super fair question, and I think I'd be putting words in his mouth, but I do get the impression, talking to him and Mitch Barnhart a little bit this summer, that they're sort of annoyed at how Kentucky is being overlooked in the SEC, that they feel like they have perhaps, you know, while the schedule looks a little more daunting, you know, every year it seems like the schedule looks really daunting and then they play it and things work out the way that they're supposed to or they don't. But, you know, I think both of those guys sort of feel, you know, without using the words, like they're being overlooked in the SEC, that maybe people are still sort of thinking them as these basement dwellers, not this team that's been able to go to two straight bowls and, you know, had a couple, you know, key upsets along the way.
Yep.
So I think that fans kind of need to see them win a bowl game. They sort of need another signature win like that Louisville win or South Carolina a couple of years ago. But I think that they're hoping that they can sneak up on some people because they're being overlooked. I mean, they've beaten a lot of teams that are going to be rated ahead of them, you know, after SEC media days and a lot of the, you know, the magazines and the preseason, you know, publications that come out.
You bring up a great point, both of you, because and going back and sifting through the last few years, it's amazing to me that, first of all, how even that Vanderbilt series has been through the years, and yet of late it's been Kentucky. And then Kentucky has owned South Carolina. You know, and every year you think, oh, South Carolina's not going to let that happen again. But for whatever reason, and Kentucky has done it in different ways, you know, it has beaten South Carolina. That's what you have to do, isn't it, to move up in the SEC East. You got to overtake teams like that before you take aim once again at the Floridas and Georgias, right?
Yeah, I mean, I definitely think that's true. I think Florida is obviously a heavy target for Kentucky this season, even though they have to go down and play in the Swamp. You know, I think that there will be a very bad taste based on what happened last season.
Oh, yeah.
So, you know, and Florida wasn't extremely successful last season, and I think a lot of UK fans sort of looked at that win as the one that got away. It might be the one that sort of keeps people from coming back. I mean, I feel like that was one of those games that really just did not change things in a positive way for Mark Stoops with the fan base.
Yeah.
But, you know, another way to look at it is, I think it was my colleague Mark Story wrote something a couple of months ago about really Kentucky's key to success in football this season is maintaining the winning streaks that it has,
right,
which is not something you normally think about with Kentucky, that they have to keep winning over Missouri. They have to keep beating South Carolina. They have to have continued success against Vanderbilt, that really they need to just keep beating these teams that they've had, you know, a couple strong seasons against, and then, like you said, try to pick off some of the higher teams.
How have we gone through a whole interview and not mentioned Benny Snell? I guess that's
Benny
our fault.
Benny would hate that.
Yeah, we better mention him right now so he doesn't add us into his disrespect reel. Obviously, I guess the most recent news is 66th overall best prospect according to SI. I mean, do you think he'll live up to some of these lofty expectations that he's, I think, deserving of having this offseason?
You know, it's really, Benny's really interesting to me because if you look at his first, I can't even remember, I think it was his final five games of the season, of the regular season, he just dominated. He put up numbers that no Kentucky running back has put up in sort of five straight games like that, and had a ton of success and really came into the offseason with some momentum. But I do remember thinking in those first, you know, like after that Mississippi State game when he had his lowest yardage of his career, thinking maybe it was a freshman thing. Maybe they now know what to do with him. Maybe defenses are scheming better for him. We're not going to see that Benny that we saw as a freshman. And then that final five games of the season, I think it was directly after that Mississippi State loss when he had his lowest, you know, yardage of the year, that he was really able to sort of pick up and do some things. And I think that, you know, he's chasing something right now. I mean, he's chasing a record. He knows this is probably going to be his last season at Kentucky. His carries might be more limited if A.J. Rose really comes on. So I think we're going to see a different level of Benny Snell than we've even seen in the last 2 years, which is sort of fun to think about.
And what's so incredible about his numbers, you know, and you look at a Sonny Collins and a Mo Williams, he's right up there with him, he's going to blow by him. He didn't even play in his first two games as a Kentucky Wildcat. And he's still in 3 seasons, really less than 3 seasons, if he stays healthy, he's going to make because he plays behind a great O-line. I say that because Drake the intern is sitting right here in our studio. Jen Smith of the Herald Leader. You can follow her at Kentucky.com. Jen, thank you so much. And we are, like you, we are counting the days. I'm sure we'll talk again before the opener, but thanks for your time.
I can't wait. I'll talk to you soon.
Appreciate it. Thank you so much. Does a great job. Nobody does it better covering the UK football beat than Jen Smith. We're back in just a minute, 6:30, WLAP. Thanks again to Jen Smith for joining us. You know, my Japanese World Cup team, it just keeps giving. They're called the Samurai Blue, by the way. Eliminated Monday, fans stuck around, helped clean up the stadium, the sections where they were sitting, after a crushing defeat by Belgium. The team, Curtis Birch, the team cleaned up the locker room and left behind a thank you note. How about that?
Class.
It is. Very classy.
Solid class right there.
Today they left a message with the word spasibo, which means thank you.
Well, I mean, that's pretty impressive. And then today, the crazy action continued.
Go ahead.
Colombia was down 1-0.
1-0. Mm-hmm.
To England. And in stoppage time again.
Ugh.
And I think they did this just to show how wrong we were, wrong I was when I said that, you know, stoppage time goals aren't that common. Old Colombia scored and tied the game.
Yeah.
Won in overtime.
Yeah.
But then.
Lost.
With PKs, which is kind of a huge deal because I will compare it to this. The Florida State field goal kicker is like England in PKs. They always miss. But today, England won.
Wide
and
everyone
was freaking out because England always loses in PKs.
And if you've watched any of these, you know that penalty kicks, first of all, it's such a great subject of debate. The beautiful game. You know, they'll play for however many minutes, and then they decided if they have to on penalty kicks. We'll come back to that. Curtis, how are you, man?
Hey, Mr. Gable, we all miss you while he's on vacation. I got to talk real quick because, anyway, there's Mr. Jackson plays football for Kentucky. I thought he was going to tell me for a pass there first. But anyway, but where you're gone and everything, I want to think about this and talk about tomorrow night. But running back Benny Snell, he should be ranked the top 10 in NCAA players. I don't care what they say. It's like 66 something. I think that's very wrong.
Yep.
I really do.
Yep.
And also, if y'all can, you and Quack Curtis, you got some big fans down in Central Kentucky. You know, Shaw Slusher, you know, Shaw Slusher Insurance Agency, you know, Shelter Insurance, all
that
staff.
Oh, yeah.
They want y'all to come down tomorrow and ride in the 4th of July parade with the Larry Boss will be down on the fire truck. They want y'all to come down there, too.
Well, I'm unfortunately I have to work at the TV station tomorrow, so.
I took care of that. All right, call. Dave Baker will be there. Buzz Baker will be there. And don't forget, they drove all the way to Stanford to give you some food. Hurry up, get that food outside for the squirrels get. I got to go back.
Oh, Curtis takes care of us every now and then, and he did tonight. And we do appreciate that.
I wish I had a camera because Curtis called when Kyle Tucker was guest hosting last week, and Kyle did not know how to react.
And you let him go into a cold.
Yes, I did not tell him.
Hey,
what.
Somebody wants to talk to you.
That's exactly what I did.
By the way, the Kyle Tucker best of will be on tomorrow night on the holiday. We'll tell you more about that in hour number two. And talk more about the basketball Wildcats here on 630 WLAP. Welcome back. Hour number two of our program. And this will be, of course, the live show leading up to tomorrow's holiday. And as I mentioned earlier, we will have the best of the Big Blue Insider. And we are going to replay the Kyle Tucker episode. Well, I think now he sat in twice for me last week, didn't he?
Yeah, we're going to do the Friday episode where we reviewed the Kyle Tucker era of UK basketball.
Good.
Even though not officially announcing anything, but, you know, he might be covering Kentucky, might not. He covered all that. If you want to hear it, you'll be able to listen to it
there
tomorrow.
You go. So while you're cooking outside, you know, doing the barbecue thing and all that, just crank your radio or your phone with iHeartMedia and check it out. But we are live and in color tonight. Yours truly, along with Curtis Burst, Drake, the interns in the studio. And welcoming on the celebrity hotline is Mr. Brett Dawson, who, of course, covered the UK beat for more than one fine agency and now is an NBA beat writer and covers the Oklahoma City Thunder. How are you tonight, sir?
I'm doing great. I'm a little bit concerned that you're doing a best of show and it's a Kyle Tucker show. Like, you don't have any of your own work that's better than something Kyle can come in and do?
Not only is it a Kyle Tucker show, it's like it represents 50% of the shows that he hosted. How about that?
Really incredible. I'm not sure it speaks very highly of the radio program you're putting on that Kyle can just come in and do a best of show.
I think more than anything, it's Curtis. It's easier for Curtis to just cue up those segments than it is to go sifting through anything I did a month ago. So well, it is what it is, Brett. You know what I'm saying.
Fair enough. I feel like you're getting a little too much credit there.
We wanted to talk to Brett. We always enjoy talking NBA and slash UK with Brett because there is crossover, and once again, there's even more now with Nerlens Noel signing a free agent contract. How surprising was that to you? Because kind of caught us off guard over here.
Not totally. There had been some reports of interest, and he's a guy that they have liked around here for a while. They have kind of an MO here, and a lot of times what you see is high draft picks who maybe haven't quite clicked in other places. Deion Waiters is a great example, who came here, really thrived here, and then went on and has played well in Miami. Ennis Kanter was a guy like that who really wasn't a fit in Utah. They traded for him, and his career really flourished here. So they like high draft picks. Preferably, they like elite athletes. They like versatile defenders. They like length and speed. And Nerlens is all those things.
Yeah.
I mean, it has not worked out for him to this stage, but the measurables and some of the defensive analytics on Nerlens are the kinds of things that they really circle here.
Nerlens Noel, we all know that he had a bit of a star-crossed season at Kentucky, but he clearly was an elite defender. And I thought, Brett, that he would – obviously, when he got healthy, make the step up to the NBA. And it was not going to be an overnight thing, of course, even after he was healthy. But it seems like with his off-the-court, let's just call him antics, he can't seem to get out of his own way. Is there a maturity problem there, do you think?
There has been, certainly. You know, on the court, he was really good his first 2 years. He redshirted kind of a year Philly. And then his first actual years in the NBA – he was really good. Statistically, he averaged double-figure points, a lot of rebounds, a lot of blocks. I don't know how much people remember this from him at Kentucky, but he had a real knack as a passer, and he showed that in Philly as well. And he's gotten away from some of that stuff, and part of it is what you mentioned. It's some off-court stuff. Philly obviously also stockpiled big guys. I mean, they turn around and draft Joel Embiid.
Right.
They draft Jahlil Okafor. So he got a little crowded out there. He was very unhappy about it. He made it very clear that he was unhappy about it. He went to Dallas, and there was some stuff in Dallas. One, a little bit of awkward stuff. He did have a third positive marijuana test. Got him five game suspension. And he also just kind of struggled. He had a thumb injury. He was kind of, there's this sort of famous thing where he left the bench at halftime once to get a hot dog in the media room, which was weird at the beginning of last season. But he came back after that, and really, after the thumb injury, he came back up until he was suspended the last five games, he played pretty well. You know, he played a lot more minutes. His offensive, his rebounding numbers were really good. His offense, you know, was what it was. It wasn't a lot. But at the end of the season, Rick Carlisle, the coach there, said, you know, that Nerlens handled the suspension really well. He came to tell Carlisle about it man-to-man. He said that earned a lot of respect from him. And he said by the end of the year, Nerlens Noel had convinced him he could play for a winning team in the league. And that's a step for Nerlens. And I think this decision to come to Oklahoma City on a minimum contract is also a step that sort of says, look, this is a reputation this place has for getting guys to kind of right the ship, and I want to be one of those guys that does it.
All right, Brett, now on the court with Nerlens, two-parter here. Where does he fit in the rotation? There's no way he and Steven Adams can play together, right?
He'll be the backup center.
Okay.
Where last year they played, they had Jeremy Grant playing some backup center, and they had Patrick Patterson at center in some small lineups. That is Nerlens' spot now. So those guys now become kind of part of a power forward rotation. And that will a lot will depend on whether Carmelo Anthony is here, because one of those guys, most likely Patrick Patterson, would start if Carmelo Anthony isn't here. If Carmelo's here, you might see Patrick, the victim of kind of a numbers game. He could be a little either squeezed out in the rotation or maybe moved elsewhere, I would think. If there's so many moving parts still, so a lot could change, but that's my thought right now.
And then what about Dakari Johnson, who's on that two-way contract and made it up last year some? Is he going to be the odd man out if Carmelo, ends up staying, or what's going to happen there, do you think?
It's an interesting thing. A lot of people have asked me about that with him because he's on a really – he is actually on a full NBA contract, not a two-way deal. So he does play for both teams. He does get sent down to the G League sometimes. But his contract is an NBA contract, so he's paid like an NBA player, whether he's playing in the big league or the G League. So, he's on a very inexpensive deal. The Thunder has, in the past, carried three centers. And because of the finances, just the way they're constructed right now, and Carmelo's money, which they're probably not going to get off, even if they move Carmelo, it's probably going to be most likely some kind of buyout or they take some money back. So they're going to have a really expensive team, maybe the most expensive team in the history of the NBA next year with salary and tax combined. So a guy like Dakari, who's kind of not really a rotation guy, doesn't play a lot, is on a really inexpensive contract, you might see him still on the team and not getting a lot more minutes, but just not taking up a whole lot of the cap. And I also think, this financial situation, and you guys may have been ready to ask me this question anyway, but the financial situation also bodes well for their second-round picks. So I think Hamidou Diallo has a better chance of making the team than he would in a lot of years.
And I'm going to get to that in just a moment, but just another comment on Carmelo. Man, has he gotten salty on social media. How's that going over in the Midwest?
It's been very strange. Carmelo came in and had not a great year. He was fine as a player. He didn't shoot the ball the way they thought he would probably as he transitions into more of a catch-and-shoot role. He had the ball in his hands a lot less. But he was like an okay guy for most of the year. He averaged 16 points a game. He shot the ball reasonably fine. He didn't rock the boat. He didn't complain about his role. He didn't complain about his shots. He, from all accounts, was a great guy in the locker room, really well-liked, was great to deal with for us. And then he played very poorly in the playoffs. It was a really bad matchup for him, and he did not play well. And, after the season, he kind of went off a little bit. Said that he didn't think he could play the role that they wanted him to play, didn't think he could thrive in that role, and thought it was more of a one-year thing, and he needed to play more the way he knows how to play, which is ball in his hands, isolating a little bit more. That's not really the plan for him here, which is what's kind of sparked the season he had. Didn't really spark much talk about whether he would not be back. It was really what he said after the season and then some of this stuff that's come since.
All right, let's circle back to Hamidou, and then you and Curtis and I spoke before the draft a little bit, and talked about how his game may be better suited to the professional ranks. How does his game fit in with the way Billy Donovan runs his team there in Oklahoma City?
Yeah, it's going to be interesting. I think he's a guy, and they can't really talk about him yet because it's kind of like when you have a recruit who's committed but hasn't signed.
Oh, okay.
They've got some paperwork there. He has to be traded, and he will be traded ultimately
right. In
that Dwight Howard trade, and then they'll get him by completing another trade with Charlotte when that one's finished. So, but I think the thing about him, he's a tremendous athlete, as you guys know. He's not a high-level shooter, but he's young. I don't think anybody has written him off as a shooter at this point because he shot, 33% maybe from three. It's below average for a guy at his position. You want him to be better. but you can work on some things mechanically. The thing they're intrigued by, I think, is that Kentucky was just not a good shooting team, as you guys know. And so what happens when you're not a good shooting team, the lane crowds and a guy who is a high-level athlete like that, it's just hard for him to have a place to go. Yeah. He's going to have a hard time getting into the middle of the floor because there's a lot of traffic there. There's not a lot of shooters to pull those defenders away. So with him, what you look at as an NBA team, one, his athleticism is next level. He's among the elite athletes in the draft. Two, he is a high usage player. So he, you know, usage is the number of the percentage of possessions that end either with you shooting a free throw, a field goal, or turning the ball over. And Kevin Knox was the only guy who used more possessions on Kentucky's team last year. And so Hami was second, and he had the lowest turnover percentage. So what that means is he's using the ball a lot and not turning the ball over.
Yeah.
That bodes well for him as an NBA player, as a playmaker in space. So all those things kind of add up to be a guy who's intriguing. Now, look, he goes 45th. There's no expectation that he's going to turn into a great player.
Right.
But he's a really interesting project.
All right, Brett, important question. Did you get invited to the house party?
Did not. Media was not invited.
Oh, that's a shame. Oh, okay, and
there were a couple people snuck in, but that's not my style.
Is this going to work, like at Oklahoma City, or what are they? I mean, what do they think's going to happen next year that didn't happen this year?
Well, for one, I think they'd like to go into a season and be healthy. You know, for the full season, and the key there is Andre Roberson, their shooting guard, who is, you know, not a good shooter and not a good offensive player, but probably outside of Kawhi Leonard, who didn't play at all last year, Andre Roberson's the best perimeter defender in the NBA, and it's really not close. He's the only guy who compares to him is Kawhi Leonard. The last 20 games that Roberson played before he was injured last season, this team went 16-4. The last 16 games that their whole starting lineup played together, they were 16-0. So they had the basis of, they thought, a team that could be pretty good and a team that could, you know, maybe not challenge the Warriors, but challenge the Rockets and be competitive, beat the Warriors really soundly twice in the regular season when they had their roster together. So, you know, I don't think they view this necessarily as a team that's going to be a title contender. Nobody really should. The Warriors really are the only title contender.
Yeah.
But the thing you've got here now is this has been four straight years. You know, Kevin Durant. Well, really three straight years, but four straight players. Kevin Durant, Russell Westbrook, you weren't sure if you were going to have to trade him after Durant walked. You weren't sure if Westbrook would sign a contract extension, which he did last summer. You trade for Paul George, and you don't know if he's going to walk. So now they've got stability. Russell Westbrook, Paul George, Steven Adams, for at least 3 years, are locked into a contract. Now, you could trade one of those guys, whatever you want to do, but they're here. So maybe this season isn't going to be a team that competes with the Warriors, but now you get down to the business of really evaluating what you have and how you build around it, and you're not under the gun to do that. There's not a bunch of pressure to get it done in the short term. So I don't think they're necessarily looking at next April. They're looking at the next 3 years and how they get to be a title contender.
That's fair, I think. Well, speaking of, before we let you go, just quickly a synopsis, if you will, of your take on LeBron to L.A. was not a shocker, but Rajon Rondo now competing, and a guy you covered now competing with Lonzo, and then Boogie heads for Golden State for, you know, just a teacup full of money. I mean, it's been a pretty interesting 48 hours for 72.
Yeah, I've weirdly never covered Rondo. It's very strange. Our paths have never crossed.
Really?
So I wasn't covering Kentucky when he was there, and I missed him by a year at the Pelicans. So I've never actually dealt with him on a regular basis.
You were in Illinois,
which is weird. Everybody assumes that, but I don't know him at all. I've only talked to him two or three times, which is just kind of random. The Boogie thing is the most interesting thing, obviously. And to me, you know, my initial reaction was like, oh, here we go again, the Warriors. Again, you know, it's like they're it's not just about winning. It's about removing the possibility of losing for those guys. But I think with DeMarcus, you know, look, he obviously felt spurned by what the Pelicans offered. He can say that he didn't get an offer from the Pelicans. I know that franchise. It's not that he couldn't have gotten an offer. He wasn't happy with what they were going to offer him.
Sure.
You know, there's semantics you can argue about whether the offer was actually made, but he knew what the ballpark figure would have been there, and he wasn't happy with it, and that's a big part of the reason why he's leaving. My initial reaction, as I said, is kind of doom and gloom about the future of the NBA, but the Warriors were already going to win it, and as you look at them, you know, DeMarcus is, who knows when he's going to be healthy. He might be ready for the playoffs, in which case, it's a dominating guy to add to your playoff roster. He's such a good player. And then he'll either get paid there or he'll move on for a payday after they win a championship. But we don't know what he is at this point in his career coming off that injury.
Yeah.
I don't know that he'll be as impactful as a lot of people think he will be, especially not over the bulk of the year. In the playoffs,
right.
Maybe so.
Right. I agree with you, but it's just fascinating times, especially if you cover Kentucky basketball, and keep an eye on the NBA because, yeah, it's like it or not, it's having an impact. And whatever happens, Brett Dawson will be there covering for Oklahoma City. Thank you so much. Always informative and fun chatting with you, sir. Have a good 4th of July week.
You too. Thank you, guys.
Appreciate it. And we'll come back with more of the Big Blue Insider in just a few. LeVar Ball. We tried to keep this a LeVar-free zone, Curtis, but I think we've gone – pretty well ignoring him for the time being, but you got to look at him now, right?
Yeah, how can you not?
All right. It's like a car wreck. You got to watch. We'll take a break, come back, and reset the Lakers in just a minute. 630 WLAP. Are you already partying, Curtis?
Got to, right?
Well, it is the 4th of July.
Mm-hmm.
I guess it's after 6 the night before, so it's officially.
Here it was 1 p.m.
That's true.
Except for us.
The place emptied out. If I may I jump on the soapbox for just a moment? Would you indulge me? And this is seriously, all about the 4th and all that stuff, but please, and it sounds like I'm going old guy on you, but I'm not. I'm going animal lover. We have 3 dogs. 2 of them are terrified by fireworks. And I realize they're never, you can't have the 4th without fireworks. I get that. Please, please follow the rules in terms of don't set them off until 2 in the morning, tonight and tomorrow. Please have some respect for your fellow Central Kentuckians who have pets, not just dogs, but people have told me it spooks their horses, things like that. Please think about that. Follow, what is it, 10 o'clock, I think you've got to stop or something like that. I didn't even bother to check because we don't set them off. But it is cruel, almost to the point of torturing these animals that become so upset by this. And I know a lot of you out there may be rolling your eyes or whatever, but just think about it if you would. Not just because of those of us who need to deal with the animals, but the animals themselves who cannot do anything about it but run around in circles and wonder why this is happening to them. It's cruel. So just please at least think about that and consider shutting things down in terms of your fireworks at 10 o'clock. And look, they've been going off since Friday night. And people always talk about, I'm going to call the police. Police, bless their hearts, what are they going to do? Because by the time they get there, everybody's gone. The fireworks are already gone. But if you would indulge me with that, I would really appreciate that. And so would the animal lovers in this area.
You want a quick soundbite of noises that also might upset dogs, children.
Hang on, let me brace myself.
And some adults.
Yes. All right, I'm ready. Go ahead.
This was your boy LeVar. I think it was at his made-up league. Someone was asking him about next year's Lakers.
LeBron got a 4-year deal, right?
Yeah.
I hope he gets 4 in a row.
Yeah.
But if not, I guarantee 2 when all my boys is on the Lakers with him.
Well, you know.
Game over.
Game over.
All my boys. Even though the Lakers have already said that the next in line. Is that
Jello.
Mello?
That's Jello.
Lemon Jello?
Limoncello.
Lemon Mood Ring. Will not be invited to play for the summer league team. So he's going to have to do it the hard way. Busting down the front door. We'll talk more about that on the other side of the break. It's the Big Blue Insider, the July 3rd edition. It's the only one you're going to hear on July 3rd. Here on 630 WLAP. Stay away from me, American woman. Mama, let me be. Serving USA. You'll catch him surfing at now. Well, if you surf the web, you'll find that comment from LeVar.
I got the golden one.
Oh, please. Please share.
The one where you were talking about where he referenced LeBron as the best player
in
the world. And it is.
It was accurate.
It is peak LeVar Ball.
The Warriors can sign Boogie, Prince, Michael Jordan, anybody they want. They still ain't going to win with this team right here. Lakers with LeBron. You don't give my son the best player in the game. Don't think he's going to win no championships.
I have a question for you because...
Well, you know, there's another... I don't know if they put that all on there, but he said, Lonzo makes everybody better, including him.
Wait, Lonzo makes himself better or LeBron better?
Lonzo makes... Yeah. Lonzo is going to make LeBron better. So just when you think LeBron is as good as he can be, Lonzo is going to make him better. But I did not hear a comment about Rajon Rondo. I guess TMZ didn't know to ask.
Yeah, probably not. I mean, they're just out there to get their little bites. Yeah. So they're not probably.
By the way, I actually saw TMZ in action when I traveled.
They were filming you?
Actually, they didn't know who I was. They didn't know I worked with Curtis Burch. Otherwise, they would have been in my face. Give us some dirt on Curtis Burch. When I was traveling with the Kentucky baseball team to their West Coast trip, I think it was 3 seasons back, they played at Southern Cal, and then they played a series at UC Santa Barbara. And we landed in Los Angeles. There was TMZ. And more than one camera, just looking for people, just scouting, right? Well, here comes this group of athletic-looking young men. So whoever it was said, who are you guys? Oh, we're the Kentucky baseball team. We're here to play, you know. And they actually asked one of the players something, like, who's your favorite porn star or something like that? And, you know, it got out there, and the coaches had to pull the kids aside and say, look, you represent, you know, the university, blah, blah, blah. Don't get drawn into this stuff from the media. But I always wondered, you know, of course they're going to hang out in restaurants and at, you know, premieres and things like that and the usual haunts. But, yeah, they just send people out there with cameras and hang out at airports. And I guess they hunted down LeVar just to ask him about it.
I doubt LeVar's hard to find.
You just listen. You step outside and listen.
Yeah.
Right?
Pretty much. And plus he'll tweet out all the events that he has going on because I'm sure he has to do a lot of promotion to sell those shoes that I have yet to see anybody actually wear in public.
Well, as kids. His sons.
No, wasn't that the whole thing? Lonzo was wearing Nikes a good portion last year.
No, overseas.
Oh, okay.
Like anybody's going to see that.
Yeah. On a Facebook Live stream that they got going on.
It is interesting, though, that all this LeBron chatter has basically relegated LeVar to the back row.
Where he belongs.
But it's going to fire up again. When Rondo gets into camp with him. And, boy, you think the Kentucky quarterback picture is going to be an ongoing saga. Can you imagine?
I mean, it's going to be every – I've heard, like, national guys. One was – they were joke. I've heard multiple national guys just joke about, well, I guess I'm going to move out to L.A. now. Or maybe, like, getting a house between Golden State and L.A. I don't know what the city between the two – would be where I can just go back and forth because that's where all the news is going to be generated this season.
Well, it reminds you of when ESPN.com actually used real live writers and they set up a LeBron bureau basically for the website. They had a writer set up in Miami and he covered LeBron on a daily basis down in Miami. Not a bad gig, but you'd think you'd get tired of it after
pretty
a
good.
While.
I don't know. There's always storylines.
Oh, yeah.
Plenty to talk about.
Yeah. Well, speaking of which, we talked, if you missed it earlier, we talked with Jen Smith about the fact that Kentucky football only 60 days away. And workouts are going on right now, I know. And they're going on for everybody. But the real football being played in Russia. And by the way, England beats Colombia. I can't even pretend to know if that's a big deal.
Yeah, I told you it was because it was in PKs.
Well, no, I know it was in PKs because I saw it. But my question is to you, how big of an upset is that?
I don't know if it's an upset or not. I just know the English haven't performed well in the World Cup recently, and they've never won it. So anytime they win in a knockout stage is huge.
Exactly. And the other question, we were talking the other night about ultimately deciding a game on penalty kicks and what would be the equivalent. and I guess maybe the college football overtime, to me, it would be like deciding a baseball playoff game at home run derby. No one would ever do that, would they?
That sounds fun. I would actually watch baseball.
Or deciding an NBA championship. You know, they've played regulation. They play three overtimes. We can't decide. So now we're going to play one-on-one.
That'd be amazing. Let's go. Your best player versus our best player.
Yeah.
Make it happen.
Yeah. I don't know. I've never heard, read.
Everybody just gets mad that soccer ties, and then when they have the solution for the tie and knockout rounds, people make fun of that. So just they don't win. Soccer can't win. What do you want soccer to do?
I've never seen or heard people who cover the sport on a regular basis knock the PK element. They accept it as an inevitable part of the game. Because knowing that it's not unusual to sit there and watch a 1-1 or even a 0-0, what are you going to do? Just keep playing? Overtime after overtime? You know, I guess the only thing, Curtis, you might be able to do is either add more players, like play a 10-minute overtime, and if nobody scores, add another player. Or subtract a player.
Yeah, I think subtracting would get more goals. But so if you were going that route, you'd probably take guys off the field. Well, no, it would, because it'd be less crowded. So players would be able to operate, and they'd be able to score easier.
But I'm thinking, imagine having like 8 guys out there, or 10 guys out there, and just it'd be a bloodbath.
Well, that'd be less than 11. So many players are on a soccer team.
Is that how many are on the field? See, I don't even know how many are on.
Yeah. That's
how much I know.
There's 11 on the field.
Yeah, all right. Well, like 15 on 15.
No one would ever score.
Probably not. It should be kind of cool, though. Be throwing elbows.
It's like hockey when they go down when people
power
have,
play. That'd be all right. Do a power play.
Hockey has shootouts, too.
Go 11 on 8. I think we're on to something here.
I'll alert USA Soccer.
Well, that shows how much I know about soccer. And I'm good with that, right?
I mean, I guess we've come to expect a little bit more, but...
Dick Gabriel's award-winning soccer coverage.
Hey, I'll stand by our claims that we are the market leader in World Cup coverage, right?
Without a doubt.
Going into the 4th of July break, and this is what we're talking about. We're talking about NBA free agency. We haven't even mentioned your Reds.
Don't jinx them.
Is that why you haven't said much about them?
Yeah.
Because, you know, they are, other than individual storylines, you know, this player's slumping, that player, Machado, might be traded, stuff like that, what's going on with the Dodgers. But in general, the Reds heating up are the story right now in Major League Baseball. And that's going to level off.
Is it?
Yeah, it will eventually. You know.
Good news keeps rolling in. They just signed Jonathan India today. He's on the roster. It's all good to go. No holdout.
He's not on a major league roster.
No, of course not. Even though, why not? Let's get it going. Has anybody ever done that in baseball?
Yeah. Gone directly to majors?
Yeah. When was the last time?
David Clyde did it. Not many. I think David Clyde did it. We'll have to Google that.
Because that'd be fun. That'd be Randolph Moore situation. He was where you just graduate college and then go straight to the pros.
He was a high school pitcher. He might have made one appearance in the minors. I don't know. But anyhow, they're crushing the baseball. And I will stand by my theory that Homer Bailey's move to the bullpen, which kind of coincided with a new manager. And I usually dismiss managerial changes as just management trying to prove that they are doing something. I mean, perhaps the new voice is what they needed. I'd not read that Riggleman has changed much of anything, has he?
# Riggle Manager of the Year.
Very good.
That trending.
Very good, Kurt.
I've sent that out several times. I think if he wins the same percentage of games he's won in the last
question
20
is, has anybody retweeted it?
Of course. You know my...
You don't count.
My Twitter followers. I've retweeted it from the show account, so...
Oh, yep. There you go. All right. So it's mine, too. I can claim it a little bit. No, they are fun to watch, and we need to get Pecoro back on here to talk about what the heck's going on up there.
I saw something fun on Instagram last night. My favorite, your favorite, everyone's favorite social media follow behind Rich Brooks, Duron Lamb.
He's entertaining.
He was in New York, where he's from. I don't know if you ever knew that. Did you know
yes.
Duron Lamb is from New York? Might have mentioned it. He's second in mentions.
Not as much as Ramel Bradley.
Yeah, that's what I was saying. Second in New York mentions behind Ramel Bradley from a UK basketball perspective. But he was sitting there, and he has this little Instagram story, and it's kind of confusing at first. Because it's his face, and it's tagged Kemba Walker. And he just says, in 2011, we win a championship if we have my man right here. And he flips the camera, and he's working out with Enes Kanter.
Wow.
And Enes Kanter like hits a shot, and he goes, take that, NCAA. And then so he's talking trash about the 2011 team and how they got... hosed is a good way to put it.
Enes Kanter is your guy too.
Oh yeah, he's wildly entertaining, and he's been out of control on social media. Honestly, I mean, tweeting out about, because did you see once the Warriors got Cousins? I think he tweeted out, "Do the DeAndre Jordan deal and don't sign. Come to New York. Come back to the East." I mean, he's a lunatic on there.
Oh, he's fun.
And I mean, we joke, and he's humorous, but people were kind of getting on him, replying to me like, man, you're going to get fined by the commissioner and all this stuff, which I guess potentially could be true. He's probably saying some things, tampering rules and those kind of things. He's probably stepping over some lines.
A lot of players are doing that.
Yeah, though. Yeah, I know. So, I mean, I don't know if a
using
fine.
Using social media.
Yeah, I don't know if a fine will come or not, but in my mind, I'm reading that. I'm like, this dude's taking on his home country's government.
Thank you.
I don't think he's too worried about Commissioner Silver coming down on him.
His father may be looking at jail time.
Yeah, so I mean,
prison time. In a Turkish prison.
Yeah, he's...
Midnight Express stuff.
He's not going to slow down.
No, no.
And I'm glad he's not, because he's super
entertaining. And let me ask you this. How bad would that look now if you're Adam Silver and you try to censor Enes Kanter, who, as you point out, it's not a laughing matter, really.
No, that part isn't.
Who is taking on the government of his native country, which is just some really bad people, and are threatening to do bad things to his family, who are, I think his dad is still in hiding. And you're the NBA commissioner, and you're going to, in a market like New York, and you're going to drag him in and say, listen, son, you need to keep your mouth shut. Come on. How bad is that going to make him look? And he's trying to be the player's commissioner. That ain't going to happen.
Yeah, because he tweeted out, I mean, here's the one that everybody thought he was going to get maybe in trouble for. And it's a really bad Photoshop picture of Adam Silver's head, and I think it's on Klay Thompson's body.
Oh, that was terrible,
And he's in a Golden State Warriors jersey, obviously, and it says, Adam Silver has agreed to a mid-level extension with the Golden State Warriors, league sources tell me. Which, I mean, it's the thing is, it's not really that good of a joke. But it's the fact that it's coming from an NBA player is what makes it kind of, you know, funny. And the fact that we know Kanter, what he's about to a certain extent, his time at UK. We've only talked to him on a limited capacity, but you saw his personality come through at Madness when he comes out in the Undertaker outfit to the Undertaker theme. He's just kind of a big old goofball, and he loves to have fun. So I just get a ton of enjoyment seeing him, you know, enjoy New York, enjoy the opportunities had. Because, I mean, last year he was all psyched to get, I forget which came first. If it was, he was in the Melo trade. So I think Paul George came first, and then the Melo trade happened, if I'm remembering correctly. But anyway, he was talking about, he was excited to be a part of the Thunder. Then he got shipped to New York, and everybody was making fun of it. And he's like, he flipped it on his head. He's like, New York, this is the best thing ever.
Yeah, really.
So he always takes the high road and tries to have fun with everything.
The positive spin. And doesn't it seem like forever ago that he was part of Oklahoma City?
Seems like a while.
It does.
I mean, now you don't even think of him as a member of the Jazz.
Yeah.
And I mean,
as a member of the Jazz.
Yeah, yeah. So this is his third team.
Which to me was one of the – and I love Salt Lake City. Love it. And, again, a buddy is their play-by-play guy as well. But It just seems like, of all places for him to go, that seemed like the most untoward place, doesn't it?
Yeah.
Even more so than OKC.
Yeah.
Salt Lake City. A couple of tweets before we move along into our last segment. Jen Smith, when we were talking with Brett Dawson, pointed out that it is an all-Kentucky Colonel conversation, although, Curtis, you did not have the privilege of working with a Colonel, so three of the four of us involved, Brett and Jen. And, yeah, I'm a Kentucky Colonel alum. Didn't know that, Drake, the intern, did you, that I'm a Kentucky Colonel alum? Did you know that?
No, I
didn't know
idea.
That. See, that's why you show up for work. You learn. Let's see. Ryan Sally says, I totally agree with you, fireworks and animals. Dogs and other animals don't deserve to be tormented, especially by illegal shenanigans. Please be respectful. Yeah, enjoy your fireworks. Enjoy them. But please follow the rules when it comes to how late in the evening you can do it. It's going to be bad regardless, but I get it. I love fireworks, but just please don't torture the animals. And Vinnie Hardy, I guess somehow, did we bring this up Sunday night? I don't know. Said, so yours truly, Grant. Yeah, okay, that's right. We were talking about grandparents and what we call them. And I told him that on my father's side, my grandmother went by Grandma. And naturally, Cameron Mills had to put it down. Oh, that's real original. That's real creative. But as I told him, on Market Street in Fairmont, West Virginia, when Maddalena Gabriele lived there and started having grandchildren, not that she had them, everybody called her Grandma. Whether they had grandkids or not, whether they were grandmothers or not, they all called my grandmother Grandma. Only it kind of came out with all the Italians, Grandma. So Vinny said, my grandmother, question, was the baddest lady in Jared Prickett's hometown. I don't know if she was the baddest, but she moved from Italy to Fairmont, West Virginia, home of Jared Prickett and Curtis Birch. What famous gymnast? Mary Lou Retton.
On the tip of my tongue.
I figured as much. We'll come back and wrap it up. 6:30 WLAP. That's right. Curtis getting us ready for the 4th of July weekend. We do appreciate that. And we do appreciate Drake, the intern, who has confirmed what I had said. Yes, indeed, David Clyde did make it directly from high school to the bigs. He played for the Rangers back when the Rangers were terrible and they needed to sell tickets. Didn't have a great career, but he did. But what are some of – I had forgotten about some of these guys who went directly to the majors without playing minor league ball. Who else? Hang on. There you go.
Well, it seems to be something that is kind of dying out. There's only been two since 1995. You guys probably remember Mike Leake, drafted by Cincinnati out of Arizona State.
Good pitcher, yeah.
That was back in 2009, and he's the most recent. So since before him, you got to go back to 2000. Xavier Natty, infielder?
I do remember. I don't remember who he played for.
But really, you got to go back all the way to the 90s, 80s to get a lot of these guys. Jim Abbott.
Yeah, University of Michigan, one-handed pitcher.
Yep, that was him.
Pitched a no-hitter in the major leagues.
Dave Winfield,
superstar athlete at the University of Minnesota, became a Hall of Fame player with the Padres, but was a great basketball player, baseball player, and was also drafted, so was Pat Riley, by an NFL team. I don't remember who, just in case he wanted to play the NFL.
Yeah, that was my goal when I was little. I wanted to go pro in all three sports.
How's it going?
Well, see, I stopped growing at 6 foot two.
Oh.
And you can't play center in the pros at 6 foot two. And
Chuck Hayes played it at 6'5", but that's about.
I was a big Chuck Hayes fan.
Yeah.
Loved him.
Shortest starting center in the history of the NBA.
Well, did you also know he was one of the top football prospects coming out of high school?
Tight end?
Offensive what was tackle.
He? Was he an OT?
Yeah. It came down between football, playing O-line at USC. Out in California or Kentucky basketball.
Tubby Smith loved basketball players who also played football because he did, and he said not very well, but he said he appreciated the toughness that it brought to the basketball court.
Yeah. So wouldn't that be nice, getting drafted straight out of high school to go to make millions of dollars right after that, just skip the minor leagues?
Any other names you can share?
Let's see. I'm trying to see if I can recognize any of these, but these are some old-timer names. I don't
recognize them. Well, I might recognize them.
How about Eddie Bain?
Yes.
Let's see. Dave Roberts?
Yeah.
We're going back to the early 70s,
yeah,
too.
Well, I'm old. Remember that.
Rob Ellis.
Mm-hmm.
Let's see here. Bert Hooten?
Bert Hooten, yeah. And he became a great pitcher.
Really?
Yeah.
Out of Texas?
Yep.
Let's see here.
Yeah.
Knuckle
curveball guy.
Tim Conroy.
Nope, don't know that one.
Yeah, he was drafted out of high school.
All right. Well, you've done a good job tonight, Drake the intern. Appreciate you. Curtis, appreciate you. Have a great 4th. Stay tuned tomorrow night in this same time slot, the best of. It'll be the best of Kyle Tucker. How about that? For Curtis and Drake, Dick Gabriel, that's it. Good night from Lexington.
You can do what you want to us, but we're not going to sit here and listen to you badmouth the United States of America. Gentlemen!